Hello, and thank you for joining us for today's webinar. I'm Nancy Stone with RealCom, and we're pleased to be kicking off our new CRE Enterprise Tech Series with Part 1, Next Gen Leasing. We have a great panel who'll be exploring automated lease generation, deal flow and space flow management, and business intelligence in an informal roundtable discussion. Before we get started, let's review a few housekeeping items. First, please use the Q&A box on the bottom right of your screen to submit questions or comments. We'll try to get to them during the discussion, and if not, we'll follow up if we run short of time. For the best webinar experience, we suggest you close any other internet applications you may be running. If you have any technical issues during the session, please contact me at nstone@realcom.com. And lastly, this webinar is being recorded, and a link to the recording will be sent to all registrants. We'd like to thank today's gold sponsors, Lease Pilot, Planometron, and RemLogix. You'll be hearing from each of these companies during the session. Today's webinar will be moderated by Cecilia Lee, Senior Vice President, CIO at Urban Edge Properties, a REIT that acquires, develops, owns, manages, and improves retail real estate in urban communities. Cecilia has more than 20 years of experience as a proven technology strategist and business transformation expert. Cecilia, welcome, and thanks for moderating today's panel.
Thank you, Nancy, for the introduction, and hello, everyone. Welcome to RealCom's Next Gen Leasing webinar. So lease automation is certainly not a new topic, but it has remained a relevant topic as it is forever changing with technology advancements, recent events like the pandemic, and the changing needs of the business. So today, we'll be discussing how forward-thinking real estate organizations and software companies have developed automated processes for deal management, space management, and lease renegotiations. But before we start, let me introduce you to this powerhouse panel that we have today, starting with Susan Girock. She's currently the VP of IT and CIO for Wash REIT, a publicly traded REIT based in Washington, D.C. She has over 25 years of experience in various technology roles spanning manufacturing, consulting, application service provider, and commercial real estate organizations. Up next, we have Helene Stein, who is the SVP and CIO of Brixmore, which owns and operates a high-quality national portfolio of open-air shopping centers. Its 393 retail centers comprise of approximately 69 million square feet of prime retail space in established trade areas. Next, we have Donnie Law. He's the CEO and Chief Software Architect at RemLogix. As a sought-out leader, Donnie Law has over 29 years of experience in enterprise real estate management software development and best practice implementations. He has developed and delivered REM and utility billing software solutions to customers globally. Next, we have Gabrielle Safar, who is the co-founder and CEO of Lease Pilot, a cloud-based software provider that facilitates the preparation and abstraction of commercial leases. As a former real estate attorney, he's focused on promoting a paradigm shift in the way commercial leases are drafted, negotiated, and consumed by real estate organizations. Next, we have Stacia O'Connor, who currently holds the position of SVP of Operations at JBG Smith, managing the leasing and lease admin functions. Stacia has over 25 years of real estate experience leveraging her financial expertise with various operational management roles. And last but not least, Annette Weil. She's the VP Client Services and co-founder of Planimatron, a company that delivers data and graphics-centric CRE space management solutions. With over 500 million square feet in the platform in North America, Australia, and China, Annette works with clients to deliver effective and fully integrated solutions. Welcome, panelists. So now that we have all the panelists, we've introduced everybody, what I'd like to know is who do we have today in the audience? So I'd like to poll the audience with two questions. The first one being, what role do you play in your organization? I'll give you a couple of seconds so that you can select, and then we'll show our results. Okay. All right, we have a lot of IT people followed by leasing and other. I'll be interested in operations. I'll be interested of knowing to know what the others are. So if you want to put it in the chat, feel free. The next question is, what is your primary asset type? So I'll give you a few minutes and fill in your options. And we'll be sharing the results shortly. All right, lots of office, lots of retail, and industrial and other. Same thing, if you wanna share with us where you are in the other section, feel free to put it in the chat. So, Grau, this is a great mix of an audience. And I'm sure that our panelists today will be able to provide a lot of insight that is relevant to you. I also want to remind you that we will be taking questions throughout the call, so don't be shy. Put it on the chat, and we'll try to get them in as we can. Okay, so since we have so many in the retail and office, and we have two people in our panel that is specifically focused on retail and office, let's invite Helene and Susan to answer a question that I'm sure many of you have, which is, what does lease automation really mean today, and where does it start?
Thanks, Cecilia, for the question. I think in the past, it started with a deal sheet getting pushed through some approval processes. But in today's world, it really encompasses the full life cycle, from prospecting using market intelligence and automation tools. And it's real now actual CRM, knowing your customer, having a 360 view of your customers, enabling efficient portfolio views with current tenants. And again, continuing that deal flow process of the past, but embedding collaboration and analytics. And one of the topics I know we're going to discuss a little more is the lease automation and generation piece through getting it into your ERP system and abstracting it.
Mm-hmm. Susan, what about for you? What does it mean today for you in the office?
For us, it's really identifying all of the participants in the leasing ecosystem. And when we think about lease automation, we sat down a couple of years ago and we said, you know, we have some really good individual tools, but are they talking to each other as efficiently as they could be? Where do we have opportunities to streamline our process? Because I think all of us on this call know that speed is one of the key areas of the leasing process. The faster you can get that lease done and signed and that tenant moved in, the better and happier everybody is. For us as well, it was really saying we need more transparency with all of these different people, both inside the company and outside the company, working in the leasing process. How did we know exactly where we were as far as how the lease was moving through the system? And how did we make sure we were collecting the information at just the right time so that we would enable others who had to process the information downstream? So for us, it was really taking a big long look at what are we using today? How do we use it better? And how do we integrate it so that everybody has that transparent view into the process?
That's great. So that's a great segue to my next question, which is, you know, what is the goal today of automating all these processes? And I'm going to open this question to everybody on the panel, because I'm sure whether you are a practitioner or in no matter what asset type, you know, you have goals when you implement these platforms. So if anybody wants to take this question.
Please. I mean, I think Susan really hit on it when she said speed and transparency and collaboration. I mean, that is the most important thing, is every day you can shave off in the process and get a tenant moved in faster and efficiently with a great experience, the better it is for your bottom line. And these tools today really enable that transparency, the collaboration of groups who normally wouldn't communicate with each other through this process, where deal makers would do their deal, they'd kick it over to legal, legal would kick it over to construction. Now they're all part of the process. Mm-hmm. They can all chat about the process as it's happening, and it's very transparent.
One of the things that I hear a lot from our customers that they're starting to focus on is looking at tenants like customers. And this is another way of saying the same thing that Susan and Helene were saying. To the extent that during the sales process, which leasing is a sales process for a real estate company, if you can improve that customer experience through responsiveness and superior engagement, it creates an overall better customer experience, which increases customer loyalty and customer retention, which as businesses, those are important objectives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think one thing too that we've seen is through all this, customers are looking at doing more with less too, because you got people scattered around, and you know, we've learned a lot over this past year, and being able to pull all that information together from different locations and then having it flow through the system. So the system is pushing it through, like Elaine and Susan said, you're tracking all this information, you're trying to get it into the right hands to be able to automate that process, eliminate the errors, the speed of getting it through the process. All of that is a key factor in doing that automation that we've seen.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And you know, one of the things, and this is certainly not a sexy aspect of it, but certainly came to light during COVID-19, and I think others on the panel can speak to this as well, is for a long time, leasing processes within commercial real estate companies were very manual. It was, you know, the lease that to be signed is in the blue folder, and there's a pink sheet on top of it, and you sign that and you pass it to the next person, and then they sign the green sheet. Mm-hmm. You can't do that when everybody's working remotely. And so some of ours was not just for the speed and the transparency, but it was to say, we need to enable our business to operate no matter where people are working.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so we have a saying within the department of, we want ubiquitous, frictionless IT, meaning you can access it anywhere, any device, and it should be easy. I can't say we're there, but that is our goal. And this COVID has shown, as Susan was saying, for the signing of leases, you know, having DocuSign or any of those products became a necessity. So if you hadn't done it prior to this, you were quickly having to implement.
Yeah, absolutely. It seems like, especially with COVID, you know, it really forced us as an industry to move forward and continue implementing to make things easier for our business, for sure. So let me ask you, is there a silver bullet for lease process automation? Susan, do you want to take this one?
I wish I could say yes. There is not. And I am a big proponent of off-the-shelf products and love to make them work and work together in the organization. But I think each organization's needs are different. I think each organization's structure is different. The things that they care about are different. And there's just not going to be that one size fits all. Our philosophy at WashREIT has been to find the very best products that we can off the shelf, to integrate them well. And when we absolutely have to do custom development to make up for any shortcomings that are in place. But no silver bullet, unfortunately. I would love to hear if any of the other panelists think differently.
I was going to say, does anybody have a silver bullet? Because I want to know.
Well, I won't say it's a silver bullet, but, you know, we're talking about advanced technology, you know, and that's what we're bringing into the leasing. The technology that we're coming across now actually gives us a little more flexibility in that. So you have new platforms like no-code platforms, and you have platforms that are built. So when you're setting up for infrastructure for all of your ERP off top of that, it allows you to have a platform that is easily integrated to those. So like Susan said, you know, integrations are a fact of life, you know, and there are going to be uniqueness for each customer when you go into it. So does the tool allow you to be flexible enough to do that? I mean, we all know, as we're talking about, through COVID, we found out in our systems where we have flexibility and where we didn't. You know, where our vulnerabilities are in our platforms that our whole infrastructure is built off of. So with those platforms, newer platforms that are coming along out there today, it kind of gives you some assurance that you can pivot when things like COVID happens. You know, if something else happens again, God forbid, we deal with something like that again, you know, you have the platform to be able to do that. So there are some things that make that easier out there now that we're pulling into that leasing site that you could take advantage of. So there is, you know, light on the horizon for that.
That's good news. So can you give me an example? And again, everybody's welcome to chime in on this. How did lease process automation or any of the automation that you've done help address business challenges during COVID?
No, I can reference that. So for example, with something like LeasePilot, you know, the process of drafting the lease itself is doesn't always get a lot of attention, but it's a manual and labor intensive process for the attorneys. And what we've seen with a number of our customers, and I'm thinking of JBG Smith in particular, where they had some acute needs to increase the productivity of doing amendments. And so we were able to deploy lease automation that focused on different type of amendment modules that allowed effectively to double the productivity of getting leases or amendments out so that the same number of people could handle a pretty dramatic spike in activity volume.
Well, and Gabrielle, I'll speak to that. In this case, it was actually LeasePilot that reached out to us as well, which was, you know, a welcome invitation to see how they could help us during this time. And it really was a game changer for our attorneys. You know, I think like everybody, we were faced with decisions regarding rent relief and other things. And LeasePilot was definitely a great partner to help us, you know, help us through that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I would assume that that process, not only it helps the legal team, but also the leasing team, and of course, the executive team, right? Because what we want to do is turn those contracts, right? And having a transparency and visibility over where those contracts are going, right? I'm sure that's tremendously helpful for the leasing team as well.
We also did something similar and created an internal app that could integrate with where our collections team and our leasing team both worked and pull that information in. So to Susan's point, integration, and also Donnie, how these tools have to be agile and allow for data integration so that we could create a tracking system for multiple departments to share information about reaching out to our tenants, because we did reach out to a majority of our tenant base during COVID for, like everyone else, lease modifications, and wanted to have that collaborative workspace where everyone, it was transparent and everyone could see everyone else's notes. They could see the status of who had spoken to a tenant, and then we could send out the different types of documents. So again, that whole flexibility, transparency, and having those systems that are robust and configurable with integration tools.
And that's part of what we went through as well with our side that we went through, is that big part Elaine was talking about, the signature side. You know, when you're through COVID, like you said, you're trying to get somebody to sign this document. So having a platform like what we worked with, you know, integrate into DocuSign and things where you can actually send those documents through for signatures and configurable workflows for different approvals as well. So the workflow could be changed kind of on the fly. So now I need you to route. And if that person is not available, reroute it over to this person. So being able to reroute those to help them kind of fill in the gaps of not being in the office together. And then one thing kind of piggybacked onto that was the deferral process as well, automating that. That was a big deal for a lot of our customers where, you know, tenants couldn't pay the rent. So what do you do with those deferrals, and how do you tie that back in? So it's kind of a little bit off of the lease automation, but it's also part of the automating on different sides of that aspect around your leasing structures.
I mean,
it just shows that lease automation has gone beyond the traditional deal sheet. And these are all things that are relevant to lease automation. And to Donnie's point, I don't think the tools of 10 years ago had the workflow flexibility configuration. It was all custom programming, but today the tools now allow for power users or to make some of these not modifications and really be a participant in this.
So I'm sorry, Annette, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to add that one of the things we discovered when you have a space management system that's accurate and up to date, not being able to do a lot of on-site visits, right? Not being able to walk the floor, not being able to, you know, rely on the property manager to go and look at stuff. Having those up-to-date space plans allowed leasing to continue, even though the dependency or the requirement to do any on-site inspections was significantly hampered by COVID, but you could still feel comfortable that you were creating a deal on an accurate square footage without having the on-site validation. This is also something that our customers have told us was really valuable.
Maybe, you know, one of you can share with the audience, you know, what was the success story utilizing deal flow management, whether it's through the pandemic or now in this next gen?
I think for WashREIT, one of the things, and I'm jumping right off of what Annette was talking about, was the incorporation of virtual touring and really sophisticated virtual touring into our leasing ecosystem. You know, this is something on our multifamily side was a lot more common. That side of the business had really been a bit forward of the commercial side. But you know, being able to give people really accurate views of what space looks like, having walkthroughs of space, really helped during that time when people just weren't ready to come out and look at space physically, and they wanted to do some shopping before they made that commitment. But at the same time, they needed to be thinking about leasing decisions. That was a huge move forward for us that probably would have taken us a lot longer to put into place had COVID not happened.
And I think that some of these solutions that we're putting in place, if not all of them, are going to remain and change the way we operate as a business.
No, I agree, Cecilia. I was going to say, Susan, we were in the same position as far as, you know, virtual touring. And we've even seen that shift, even as people are coming back to the market and doing physical tours, they're still wanting to see the space virtually as well, even as a preview. And even when we were talking about, you know, electronic signatures like a DocuSign or another platform, you know, something like that, we're not going backwards. You know, we're not going to go back to Susan's blue folder or my red folder where we're passing a lease around for, you know, five people to sign off and approve. So definitely, Cecilia, I agree. There's platforms that we rolled out during COVID because we had to, but they make sense to continue even after COVID.
We also found that portfolio reviews with tenants actually worked well in a virtual environment. They were more focused. Our leasing folks had all of the market intelligence, could share that, and they will continue to perform those reviews virtually. I mean, they will still do. There's nothing like the real estate's a relationship business. Seeing people, being with people is important, but they did find those portfolio reviews, those tenant reviews, to be very efficient and effective in a virtual format.
Mm-hmm. Donnie, can you share about some of the success stories or things that people have implemented within DealFlow that have enhanced their or sped up their process?
Yeah, so what we've done, and kind of looking at that, I say supply chain, basically coming from that background as well, from beginning to end of that DealFlow process. So if you think about it, we mentioned this before about on the sales and marketing side, as you start getting those leads in, then taking that all the way through. So I capture that, and that prospect turns into more of a tenant. I capture that information. I'm going to pass that through. Are there any unit modifications need to be made? And pass that through the process for approvals. Then it takes that and actually creates like the pre-lease from that. So what we've done with the customer is take that beginning to end. So from that first initial sales cycle all the way to through creating the leasing documents themselves, and then creating the leasing information inside the ERP, and actually set up a lot of the pre-billing information for them. You have all that information that you're gathering through the process anyway. And like you said, it's usually in a folder. It's in one area. It's in their folder. They keep track of it. And said, oh, now it's my turn to go in the system and enter the information. Well, as they enter that through the system now as part of the cycle, it takes it from beginning to end, creates the documents on the backside, and actually creates it inside the leasing, getting it ready to set up for billing. So we've implemented this process with a customer from the beginning of the cycle all the way to the end, and it's really sped up their cycle. Also, it helps on the construction side too. If they got any unit modifications, they know all the dates, they know the timing. It's not an accident. The system sends reminders around that. So they know if something's on them that they need to do and get back into the flow, it reminds them of that. People can see that. So it's very visible in the system. So they can go to dashboards and see the status of any of the process through any lead, where they're at in the status and what stage they are. So taking that from beginning to end, as we started going through, has been a big improvement for them. And as you said, it's kind of one of those, you're not going to go back. You're just going to keep increasing that going forward.
Do we have any metrics? Are we saying, we're increasing speed by X? Is that visible?
I don't have any of those yet. That's actually what we're trying to work on to see what is done. I mean, they have seen a big improvement in the communication side of things with them. Like I said, when you're sitting and waiting that Joe's got it on his desk and you're waiting, when is Joe going to get a chance to look at it? The system is telling everybody, hey, we're waiting on Joe, and Joe gets a reminder that, hey, Joe, we need this information to push this along. We have a deadline. We're trying to get this done. So it does make it more visible. And does, hold people accountable in areas too, where things kind of fell through the cracks, not because they did on purpose, it's just business. You've got a lot of things going on, so it keeps it in front of them so they know, yes, I have to stay on track to get this done.
We've actually been measuring these things very precisely. We do regular customer check-ins that get accompanied by surveys of all of their stakeholders involved in the leasing process. And then we start tabulating, documenting the results. And so we've been able to show, particularly in retail, it gets the most acute. We've been able to show on a 70-day leasing cycle from LOI to signed lease. We have plenty of success stories where we're shaving off 35 days, which is hard to believe. We didn't actually believe it ourselves. And we started verifying that and testing. It's often a result of what we call the virtuous cycle of responsiveness. By getting that first draft out faster, then a tenant, especially in retail, that has a stack of things, when your lease winds up on the top of the stack, it's just natural. They respond faster. And when you can turn the second draft faster, because you have all of your clause libraries and fallback provisions, which are predictable, built into your leasing tools, well, then you respond faster. And it's just this cycle. We've also measured very closely that iteration cycle between getting a lease and turning it around, because our customers care about the customer experience, so their customer's experience, and that speed is important. And we've been able to show, traditionally it's not unusual, 3 to 5 business days is a pretty standard period of time to go from landlord receives a draft or has an LOI signed, and the next iteration gets cycled around. And we see our customers starting to turn that into 24 hours. And then the bottlenecks, rather than drafting time, start to become things like communication winds up being the key bottleneck.
Wow, that's crazy. Anybody else has seen a major change, maybe not in metrics, but definitely seeing an improvement?
I would say for us, I don't know that I could give you exact numbers, Cecilia, but great example. We had some really aggressive goals last year pre-COVID. And one of the things we had decided to do as part of our leasing ecosystem and improving the process was to implement lease pilot. So we had actually started that implementation in February of 2020. And when COVID hit, we looked at ourselves and said, you know, do we keep moving forward? Do we stop? What do we do here? And we said, this is exactly what we need in order to be able to process this large volume of tenant workouts that we're dealing with right now. And, you know, so thankfully we implemented it. We implemented it quickly and were able to take advantage of it. Normally we would not have that volume of leasing, you know, coming through our legal team. And it really helped them be as efficient as possible in getting those back out to the tenants. So while I don't have a specific number, it really helped us manage the volume of leasing that we had to do during that time.
I think one of the important things is for the speed for these automation tools is to have standards. I know that leasing, in the past, every tenant had a lease that looked different. And that's still gonna happen for your major tenants in the retail sector. But for a majority of your tenants, we moved to both a standardized long form and short form. That's the starting point that we also generate automatically out of our deal flow system is a good starting point. I think what Gabrielle and Susan are discussing is take it the next step further and to be able to speed up the whole negotiation process. That's really impressive because that's where it does start to trail off in efficiency when you're having to go back and forth in Word documents, trying to tell what they really change, updating your version of it. You lose those efficiencies.
I'm going to pause for a second because we have a couple of questions from the audience. Okay. And so one goes, quick question regarding e-signatures, for example, DocuSign, for lease execution, how many of you have implemented this into your processes? If so, how do you get by the witness signatures?
So we've implemented an electronic approval process for our leasing. We were going in that direction for, you know, commercial and retail, and COVID hit and we accelerated. It was like we were planning on rolling out in about 3 months and we rolled it out in 24 hours. So we were in a position to do that. It really has changed overall. Our entire process, the fact that now even the government will accept these electronic signatures is huge for our business. The way that we're getting around the witness signature some of the jurisdictions, and I'm not an attorney, but some of the jurisdictions have waived that requirement during COVID. So we don't have the same restrictions regarding our jurisdictions and the witnesses, because that is a hurdle for sure with some of the platforms. I know the platform we're using, there is the ability to have quote a notary, but they still have to be physically with the person that's signing. So even though the document is being signed electronically, you still have the person who witnesses them signing it electronically. So there's some limitations there. So right now we're sort of riding the COVID wave of not having this requirement with some of the witnesses because you're not actually seeing them, you know, physically sign. But that's definitely a hurdle. And I think even from the, you know, the electronic signature platforms, that's something that I think they're also trying to figure out because it's been a question that we as a vendor have, as a client have asked.
Mm-hmm. Anybody else want to take that as an answer?
I'd say that's kind of the same thing we ran into with what we're working with is kind of the same thing. You have some different restrictions based on having that witness to the same thing. Through this, a lot of that has been waived, just as Stacy had said, that you can get by with those things now, but they're working on kind of long-term pieces of it to where is that something you kind of get that signature, but then also maybe something is sent out that they can actually, you know, go and get signed when restrictions are lifted. So they're kind of working through those right now. The only other thing we've done with some of ours is you kind of route up, you know, when the document goes, it routes to kind of the witness also, but they get it and they can actually review the piece. It's not the same as being in the same room, like Stacy said, but at least gives a review of the process that, yeah, this person signed, you know, I've reviewed it and it's kind of moved on.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, thank you for that. So we have another question. Could the speakers get more specific about the various out-of-the-box automated systems they use?
And so, all of ours is built on NextWorld. We build also a NextWorld and NextBot platform. Everything we've built on has all the automated stuff built into the platform, automated workflow, no code generation of applications. It's got a lot of the newest and latest and greatest technology built into it that we build off of that gives us that flexibility.
Mm-hmm. I think I want to clarify something. I think it's easy to misinterpret also the idea of out of the box versus customization, configuration. And so I think the idea that there's a non-configurable solution that you can that can do everything from beginning to end, that just doesn't exist at this point. That said, where we are getting is with domain-specific solutions that are focused on real estate and leasing, you can get to the point where there are a lot of tools that are specific for the leasing function. And then there's a finite number of permutations that you can have on those tools that become configurable. And so you can move away from something which is just a platform, which you need to build on from scratch, versus having platforms that are built for real estate that you configure, if that distinction makes sense.
And I think that holds true more to the office world. And I think that's one of the differentiators between office and retail, that there are more out-of-the-box solutions for office for the deal flow process, where retail, most of us are on the same, and I'll say it, most of us use Salesforce, have spent a considerable amount of time customizing. Salesforce is that tool set where you can build whatever you want with it. You just have to have someone who knows how to do it. It's not all programming, it's configuration. But I think there are more off-the-shelf solutions for the office.
I think you're right. Just to underline that with, like, for example, our front-end integrations on the office side, we have customers that use VTS. And when you're a VTS user, LeasePilot and VTS have a plugin. It just works together. There's no configuration, nothing needs to happen except for some confirmations. When we integrate with a Salesforce, that's a more involved process because Salesforce has been more adopted, and we definitely see VTS more commonly on the office side, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. One thing about those platforms too, when you look at that, is when you build off of that, like your ERP, you built off the platform, the platform is important to where if your ERP can inherit that platform characteristics and functionality. So if you have the tools, you have the flexibility, and the ERP is built on top of that, then it inherits all those features, so your ERP is open as well. So that's one thing to look at on those platform sides. They're not just, you have platforms, like you said, like Gabriel said, you can build off of that are wide open. You can start building off of those pieces of platform. But if you have a platform that have ERP and applications built on top of those, do they inherit those? Which is very similar to what Salesforce has done, is how they do theirs. That gives you that flexibility because the platform and software inherit the capabilities of that platform.
Right, that's right. And I think this is why it's so important that as you're evaluating this out of the box solutions, you know, you need to really understand how does it fit with your organization, right? And how does it fit with all of the other platforms that you have in your organization? Okay, I'm gonna jump onto the next question that we have here. And it is, one of the biggest hurdles to automating the lease process is the complex nature of the actual terms of the lease. Mm-hmm. This is what generally seems to trip up AI, ML tools, and how many landlords are trying to standardize their lease templates to simplify this process, or is the highly custom or is the highly customized lease still the secret sauce that gets the deal done?
I think I touched on this a little bit, that the goal is to standardize, to have a short form, a long form, but you're never going to get 100% standardization. And for the major tenants, they'll have their own templates. But again, the more you can standardize, the better any of these tools works, because the efficiencies, and in the end, you want to be able to take that abstract and automate push into your ERP system and your reporting tools. Today we use, once we have the lease executed, we use a third party that uses a natural learning process to read the leases and then to push that data into our ERP system. But it still takes a human to review it. We're not there. But the more standardized, and again, some of the tools we've spoken about that Gabrielle with Lease Pilot has spoken, captures more of the variance between the standard and what's going out in a more elegant way than doing it through Word templates. So you might be able to track that these are the only things that changed from a standard lease. I just need to abstract those incremental changes.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things that I think is really important to sort of underline in this conversation is when you have a tenant-friendly environment, the deal people, this is the leasing people and the lawyers actually negotiating transactions, they have certain limitations on their ability to use standard provisions. And so if there are vacancies and a tenant is asking for they have a specific request, we hear all the time from our customers that, you know, you need to be able to accommodate that. So there's a huge tension between the desire to provide as much standardization because it drives efficiencies and it drives simplicity, but at the same time to recognize that there's a lot of leverage that tenants have. And it's very hard to say no. I know if we went to our customers and said, we have a very rigid platform, everything's standard, and you can't make modifications, it just won't work for them. So the trick is to understand, how do you accommodate both of these things? How can you be structured and also flexible? And that's what we've worked really hard at Lease Pilot to be able to do. And I think the key to that is to acknowledge that a lease has a logical structure. No matter what the words say, there's a market for space. And if there's a market for space, that means that there's a sort of consistency in the construct of the way that ideas are put together. And so you can leverage that logical consistency while accommodating variation in the words, if that makes any sense.
I agree. It's all in the data model. It's all in the data model. If you can make a data model that can be configured, and like we pull data from different ERPs, from JD Edwards, from MRI, from various different Yardi, but we have to have a data model that will interpret the data from all the various different ERPs the same way, and then allow it to be configured back out into the way that users are used to seeing that their portfolio and their information.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So I'm going to take a pause here because I'd like to do another audience poll and find out, where are you in automating the lease generation process, since we're talking about this? I'll give you a few minutes, or a few seconds rather. And we should be seeing the results shortly. All right, so we've had a good amount of people that are thinking about it, right? And another good amount that has already rolled out. So we have a lot of experienced people and in planning. So look, any insight? I know, Stacia, you had, no, Susan, you had had an experience in deploying lease pipe, right? So can you share with us a little bit of, you know, how you went about starting the process, right? What made you go through it? What was the planning process? And you know, from beginning to end, what was your experience like?
We found out about Lease Pilot actually at a RealCom event in 2019, and started looking very closely at it along with our legal department. And I think we've talked in this group as we were preparing for the call, you know, although they are such an important part of the process, a lot of times the legal department gets ignored when it comes to really helping them be more efficient. We had a brand new senior director who had joined our team. She was very enthusiastic about the possibilities that Lease Pilot could bring to us. And we decided to take the plunge. We really have two major kinds of leases that we're working on with Lease Pilot. Office is our primary. We also have a small retail component to our company as well. And then just like Stacia was saying, the amendments, which is a very, very big part of what we're doing. So we jumped in first into Office. I think with anything, the first implementation is where you learn a lot about yourself and about how to best work with the vendor. And I know that Gabriella said, you know, that they are continually learning and refining on their implementation processes. And I think we saw that. We saw for ourselves as well, because we had to learn how to do this too. We did the Office rollout, but the amendment and the retail rollout were even simpler. So by July, we had rolled out all three of those pieces, really starting in late February and in the middle of COVID when we were doing all of the workouts. And what our team has found is they really have a two-person team drafting all of our leases and amendments. It's made them incredibly efficient, and there are many less times that they have to go to outside resources for assistance. Now that it goes so quickly, our more experienced leasing director is able to do a lot of those more complicated leases on her own. So been a very, very good experience overall for us, and just keeps getting better as we learn more about the product and the product continues to be enhanced.
Susan, we had a similar experience. I was just going to say, when one of the attorneys came to me to say, you know, they wanted to talk about Lease Pilot, I tend to be one of those people who's a little cynical, like, there's no way they can do that. The first one, like, let me talk to them. They can't do this. And I was actually very surprised. So when I talked to Gabrielle and his team, and you know, they had answers to all my questions. And as I was trying to poke holes in how they were going to do this, you know, they had answers to all of it. And it was the same experience. I think that, you know, we did not roll it out as quickly as Susan did, but for us, we were in the process of a transition of one of our attorneys retiring and a new one coming in on the Office side. And you know, we had to sort of tackle changing our form leases at the same time. There was a lot going on. We did learn a lot, but I have to say it truly has been a game changer for us and for the attorneys. And Susan, just your example of, you know, outside resources, because of Lease Pilot, we've been able to tap into a senior paralegal to also do drafting. And, you know, just having that additional internal resource because of this platform and being able to utilize you know, that person, give them a growth opportunity, but also utilize the platform in that way, has been great for us.
Thank you both.
I mean, this is like better than a paid advertisement, huh? Elaine, have you done anything similar on the retail side?
So we do generate the lease from our CRM system, but then the negotiation and revisions are done outside the system. And you know, we are looking to improve that process as well, because I think a lot of time, as Gabrielle talked about, is spent going back and forth between our legal and the tenant's legal negotiating. So we are looking to automate that process a little more, as well as I mentioned earlier, that once the deal is done, it does go to a third party who uses natural learning to abstract it, review it, and then we push it to our ERP system and reporting tools.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to bring in a question from the audience, and this is, what do you see people use for industrial lease automation?
A good question. I think that's one of those two that has been not quickly adhered to or actually started putting those together. Now, we haven't built any of those automation tools specifically for the industrial side yet, but with what we built for our automation process, you know, Gabriel talked about, a little bit about this, or Gabrielle did a little about this earlier, was about configuration out of the, you know, out of the box, but have it to where it can be configurable, where the stages and different parts of the automation process could be turned on or off. So if you're in a situation where you're in the industrial, where you don't need all of the processes that would be towards a retail lease or an office lease, you can turn those off and design the workflow so it moves along at your pace, based on your requirements, rather than to a standard industry. So what we've tried to do is allow those to be turned on and off, be configurable, so you can adjust it as you need to.
We definitely do have, from a sort of lease drafting, the automation of the document itself, do definitely have a robust set of industrial customers, including among them Duke Realty, and I believe Dawn is on this call. So there are definitely a lot of industrial organizations because of the activity level right now. Industrial is very, very busy, and the pandemic has really highlighted the need for the owners of parks and these types of facilities to apply automation to handle an unprecedented amount of volume that they're seeing.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I have, you know, as we're talking about the different integrations, you know, certainly LeasePilot is not the only one of them. There's also other integrations and other lease automation processes that you guys have done, right, from a practitioner standpoint. So one of the questions from the audience is, what are strategies for reviewing open accounts receivable with the lease tenant, with the lease's tenant's parents? Is this integrated into the deal making system?
The answer is yes. Our goal is to keep people in the system they use the most and provide all the information they need in one spot for their decision making processes. So we bring into our CRM system information from our BI system, information from our market intelligence system, and we bring it in different slices. So we have a slice that discusses the tenant and all the children of the tenant. So I can do a full portfolio review of any tenant to see what leases, what they're paying now, any AR, any deals that are in the pipeline, and any market intelligence I might have surrounding that tenant. But I can also swing the other way and do a whole review of a property and see all the deals for a property, all the leases for a property, the AR for that property. So having different slices of it so that, again, keeping leasing from having, and other people working on the deal process, from having to go into other places to find that information, keep them focused, keep them right in one spot so that we keep the adoption up.
I agree with Helene 100%. Most people that are really working in the leasing process, the last place they want to go is your ERP system. Mm-hmm. You know, that is for the accountants. That is a great transaction system, but it is just not particularly friendly for gathering this information and combining it with real-time information. So making sure that those that receivable information is available in your CRM system is really an important part of making sure that they're in a system they're comfortable with. We also integrate that receivable information into our PropiDex system too, because we find that actually a lot of our property managers prefer working in PropiDex and going there to get information about a current lease, about a current tenant, about what's going on in the space. So, you know, having that in the system that people most like to work in mm-hmm. makes it so much easier for them to do their job.
And I have to add on to what Susan said. In today's world, I think the only folks that are still in the ERP system are the accountants and the accounting collections, anything revolving around that. I think everyone else, we have move the information to where they need it, whether that's from a business intelligence platform or in another system that they're already utilizing. That ERPs are sort of in the background, and yes, they are the source of the data, but they're not logged into by very many people anymore.
Right. And that ties into, you know, the main topic of this webinar, right? What's the next gen? It's all about speed. It's all about user experience, right? So finding the right tool for your right audience so that they can access information quickly and really understand it in a way that it's just seamless, right? So Susan, you started talking about space management, and I thought, you know, maybe this would be a good time to introduce Annette to kind of walk us through, you know, what she does from a proper space management standpoint with her platform.
Oh, I'm happy to do that. Space management has been my career-long passion as long as I can remember. I remember a time when you didn't put vacant spaces in your ERP. You just put the spaces that had leases on them. And then once something got leased, you put in the space and then you put the lease on top. And in budgeting, you'd budget all your leases, and whatever the difference was between the GLA and the leased up space was your vacancy. You didn't have to itemize vacancy. You would get drawings, great drawings, when a building was first built, but then over time they get out of date and changes don't get made. And so you end up at a point where you're in Illustrator drawings because you don't have good CADs anymore, or you have to go get the building remeasured because it's so out of date. So really, from my perspective, a lot has changed over the years, but this is sort of the space from my perspective, from our perspective, is that it's the product. That's what real estate is selling. It's what it creates, it's what it markets, it's what it leases. And the unique feature about it is it never goes away. It just gets leased over and over again. It doesn't go out of inventory. So it might get reconfigured, it might grow or shrink based on the area measurement standard that's being applied to the building, but it's finite and it's sold in portions of square feet or meters or subos if you're in Japan, you know. Mm-hmm. So product, it's the product of real estate from our perspective, the space. Mm-hmm. So you need to get those area measurements right the first time, because if you don't, you've got this napkin deal that's going a long time with you, right? They sat and did a deal for 2,000 feet, turns out it's 2,200 feet, but you're never going to get it back because it got signed, right? So that's from our perspective, the real financial incentive of making sure you've got your space and you've got the history of that space. because along comes the tenant who wants to do an audit and wants to know why 5 years ago you came up with the 2,000 square foot number and now you're coming up with the 2,200 square foot number, and you need to be able to show, well, at that time this is where the spaces were, this is where the common area was, and this is the area measurement standard we were using at the time. So having that history, being able to go back in time, be able to see the current world, and being able to see what the future could like look like, might look like, but be able to have that time frame is really what you know, space management's all about. So you might never recover the area, you might be able to recover it in recoveries, you might never get it in rent, but you know that there's a gap between what you leased it at and what it really is at. So when the opportunity comes to get it back, you have the opportunity to get it back. You can also see, is there any spaces that are, any other leases that encumber this space? It's helpful to know that, you know, these three leases in the building have ROFOs, or rights of first refusal. But if you don't know on what spaces they've got ROFOs on, you have to go through all those leases and read all that commentary and find out if that that space on the third floor has any encumbrance on it. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, space management is trying to identify the risks, identify the opportunities based on this inventory that you have. And if you can see, oh, there used to be a jewelry guy in that space, right? It's been vacant for 2 years, but used to be a jewelry guy. So it'd be easier to bring in a jewelry tenant because of the fixturing and a lot of the attributes of the space that would have met that requirement, like a lawyer going into a law firm, into a space that used to be a law firm. It's a lot easier than taking a law firm and trying to put them into a space that used to be a restaurant, you know, that kind of thing. So having those space attributes, as well as the security deposits and the receivables and the guarantors and who the neighbors are, to be able to visually see, oh, I'm about to put, you know, Kentucky Fried Chicken right beside a McDonald's. Well, that might or might not be a good idea, right? Depending on the marketplace, or you're about to put the fifth shoe store in there, but there are people who have exclusives in the mall that say, no, you can't have more than three shoe stores in this mall. And all of that is then graphically presented spatially. So it gives you a different perspective than looking at a spreadsheet or looking at a report, you know, if you're budgeting. But just one more point on the re-demising. So you're re-demising space, and particularly now not being able to actually go on site and look and see where the columns are and the corridors and all that kind of stuff. You need to be able to recalculate and see, does this affect my core factor? Does it mean that my neighbor is going to get impacted somehow by a re-demise? So all of those scenarios, ways of, you know, what could we do with that space? You can do that in a space management system. So the leasing people in the leasing process can do what they do best. They've got accurate, good information, and then they can go do their deal, mm-hmm. and not have to wait for the architect to come back to give them a number, which they can't do because they can't go on site right now, et cetera, right? So I could
Yeah. I'm gonna take a chance to poll the audience again, and I'd like to understand if your organization uses a space management software today. Take a couple of seconds. Should be seeing the results today. All right. Well, it seems like we have lots of experts in the house. 56% of people, that's amazing. And then 17% don't have one, and 17% are thinking about it. So maybe, Stacia, why don't you share with us, you know, you certainly have experience implementing space management, right? Walk us through, you know, how did you go about thinking, I mean, do we need one? Why do we need one? And then, you know, your implementation and your success story.
Yeah, I mean, we've been using PropitX for a while, and it's, you know, it's to everything Annette talked about, and for every reason that she highlighted. This is, you know, it allows us to make informed decisions when it comes to leasing our spaces. And, you know, when I talk specifically about space management, because we, as we were talking, you know, Susan and Helene, we obviously use PropitX for other purposes as well, because of the fact that we're not putting our users, most of our users, brokers, legal into the ERP. They're getting their accounting data and information on a tenant level through PropitX. But if I talk specifically just about space management, again, for us, it's about having that data to make these real-time decisions. And our spaces do change. You know, we are demising spaces, we're combining spaces. If we want to build a spec suite, you know, we need to understand what that's going to do to the rest of the floor. Maybe we're taking in some common, you know, some floor common, and it's going to change, you know, the rentable area for other spaces. You know, we have real-time information at our fingertips. And that's extremely powerful. You know, we're not relying on outside architects. We have a CAD team in-house. So when the brokers get a call from a tenant and they want another 1,000 square feet and the space next to them is vacant, you know, our CAD team is going in to PropitX and they're taking the drawing and they're adding a wall and they're telling our broker exactly how much square footage that is. And we have all of that transparency. And again, it allows us to make informed decisions. In addition, there was some recent, you know, functionality that Annette and her team has rolled out regarding core factors. And, you know, we look at our area calcs all the time. And in this sort of, you know, Susan knows this, as more office tenants are expecting amenity space. What that does is that increases their rentable, you know, their rentable number. So their rentable square footage is going up as we add all of this building common amenity space. So if we're adding a fitness center and we're adding a conference room, then our rentable area for the tenants in those spaces is going up because we're adding that space to their core factor. So what it does, this new functionality, is it allows us at times, if we feel the need, to be able to cap that core factor, still having transparency, still knowing, like, you know, what we possibly are conceding if we decide to cap a core at a certain amount for a particular space. But it really allows us to also make proactive decisions. If we know we're going to add a fitness center to a building and we have two spaces, one's 5,000, one's 7,000, we can make a decision and see exactly what that's going to do to the rentable area of our, you know, of our building and to particular spaces. If we have spaces rolling and we want to all of a sudden get that tenant to a BOMA, you know, their latest calculation, we need to have that. We need to have that information at our fingertips. And PropitX for us does that. In addition, as we were saying, we use PropitX beyond the space management piece. So for us, Annette, you touched on this, but one of the great features is you can travel in time. I actually don't know another application where I can do that. And it's very exciting because, you know, I'm responsible for writing occupancy and NOI variances on a monthly basis. And even for myself, I think I know everything that's going on in the portfolio. And I sometimes I just can't figure it out, but being able to go, you know, within PropitX, I have an easy navigation tool of clicking on a calendar and literally going back in time. If I need to go back a month, if I need to go back 6 months, if I need to go back 2 years, I can find out at that moment what our space looked like, who were the tenants in that space, you know, what they were paying for rent. I've got all of that information just by clicking through this application. Again, I think we talked about our users. We, you know, most of our users that are in PropitX are not even provisioned in our ERP because we're pushing from our ERP into PropitX. Mm-hmm. So they're getting that tenant level data through clicking. So they click a building, they click, you know, a tenant, they see their stacking plan, or for retail, they'll see a pie chart. They click on that and everything they need to know about the tenant is on that screen. So we're getting all of the economic data. We're getting all the non-economic data, so we get that ROFO information or something else, or if they have a renewal option, all of that information we see on one screen. And for an end user, that's extremely comfortable. It's not running a report out of our ERP. it's also not, you know, having to put in certain parameters and being afraid that you're not going to get the same results, because all you're doing is clicking. It's so it's very intuitive and very easy and very comforting for users that are just comfortable with looking at something visually and being able to get there. And we've tried to ensure that the information, not only that we're pulling into PropitX, but that we are also pushing from PropitX, it makes sense. So again, you know, Helene, you talked about the fact of trying to have, you know, users as much as possible in one application. You know, we do that a lot with PropitX for our leasing team. Even though we are using a, you know, sort of end-to-end leasing and marketing tool, as I'm not saying the name of it, but I think everyone knows who it is. You know, and our brokers are in there dealing with their pipeline and other things. But, you know, when it comes to just understanding the existing space, when they want to get to their floor plans and other things, they're going into PropitX. We do push to that other platform I'm talking about. So we're in the process of pushing attachments. So our floor plans, these scenario drawings, because we're able to say, you know, again, this isn't how the space exists, but this is how we might have it exist and how we can market this space. So we do a lot there. And again, for the user, one of the things that I think we did that was really powerful is we created a portal to our document management system. So most of the users don't even know that they have left PropitX and they're in our document management system, because again, as they click, they're querying just to get to that information. But if they're looking at a particular tenant screen, all they have to do is click the lease tabs the lease document tabs tab. The other thing about that is that we're not actually pushing this information. So our documents aren't being stored in more than one location. They're just in our document management system. So we still have the functionality of all that metadata that's attached to the document management system that they can still, you know, when they go into the lease documents and they're looking for the latest and greatest, they can sort by, you know, the most recent. But again, that navigation of getting them to these documents is so much user-friendly than sticking them into a search feature where, again, they're not sure the results they're going to get. So, you know, those are some of the ways that we're using PropitX specifically beyond space management. And then the last thing that we're doing is we actually feed our website through information from PropitX. So, again, I think you know, with Susan and Helene being IT professionals, you guys are always sensitive to, you know, where's the right place for the data to live? Where should it start? Where should it live? Where should we push? And we looked at PropitX and said, we're already, you know, integrated with our ERP. So we're getting all these attributes at an asset level. And all we need to do is, you know, have marketing go in and add a little bit more via PropitX, and then we can push to our website and have these building pages and information that we need. So we've taken, you know, that space management function that we truly want and that we truly need, but we've taken it to a whole other level through the use of PropitX, because we've been able to integrate. And Annette and her team are, you know, always there giving us advice, helping us through. We have ideas, and it's been a great relationship, but also a truly great platform.
Great, thank you. I'm gonna take two questions from the audience. One is for Donnie. And Donnie, I think this has to do with integration, but really how important, going back to deal flow, right, our conversation back in deal flow, how important is deal flow to the automation process?
I think it's very important. And like we've all talked about, you know, different areas, it all comes back to getting that information in the system, make sure it's accurate information into the system at the right time, so it flows through the whole thing. So I think it's, you know, very important process that you go through, because starting from the CRM side of it on the sales and going back to, you know, what, you know, creating the leasing documents. And then from there, once you have the documents, you've got to take those and pull those in. You have your lease clauses inside of your ERP side of things too. You want to be able to track that. And we've all talked about different pieces of that. So I think the deal flow, that if you want to automate the whole process, streamline it all together, make it more accurate, deal flow is a very, very key part of that process.
The next question that I have is for Gabrielle, and so it's the question is, do you anticipate a lease negotiation portal replacing passing leases back and forth?
Yes. The only reason it doesn't exist now, in at least in my opinion, is it's too much change too fast. One of the things that in one of our earlier versions of the product, the lease pilot, you draft in our platform. So you don't use Microsoft Word. And that's like a key component of the way lease pilot works is you have the flexibility to manipulate the text of the lease in lease pilot. You have the ability to use the structured automation to speed up the drafting. It's all tied to a database. But then our tenants aren't lease pilot users. So we then export that lease to Microsoft Word. The tenant can then manipulate it in Word, and we can re-import that back into lease pilot. Exporting and importing from Word was more work than just providing a tenant view of the lease and letting the tenant manipulate the lease in lease pilot, which would yield a lot of benefits. For example, in my opinion, there's two major elements that slow down real estate transactions. One, we think the drafting is hard. The lease is a complex agreement with a lot of interrelated parts. But two, communication is really, really vital. And when you have multiple stakeholders, just getting their calendars with synchronized calls can be time consuming. So if you can use contemporary tools to tag individuals, use asynchronous communications, you can move a transaction much faster. That said, it's asking the landlord to require a tenant to use a piece of software that the tenant's not familiar with was just too much. So we built the functionality to export to Word and import. But longer term, it just makes too much sense to have the landlord and tenant in the same platform. Because, you know, an interesting thing, one of our landlord clients once said, you know, you export a lease as data so it can get into our ERP. Our tenants use computers. Like, why can't you just send them the lease as a digital file so that they can import it into their systems? It allows us to differentiate ourselves as a landlord in that we're providing this in a more consumable format. So eventually, I absolutely think there'll be a common place. I don't know if a portal is the right word for it, but there'll be a common meeting place to negotiate deals.
Thank you for that. So now, with all these different technologies and platforms that we're implementing, right, one thing remains a question for many people in the audience, and as well for you as you're implementing technology, which is adoption. So what is your adoption rate in all the different platforms that you've put that you've implemented? So, you know, I'm going to open this to everybody in the panel. Please share with us, if you can, what platform. If you don't want to name the name, that's fine, but at least what it does and what has been the adoption, as well as the return on investment on that.
Well, Cecilia, I'll just talk generally real quickly about adoption and not maybe platform specific. But I found, especially with new, people are very comfortable. You know, we talk about change management and trying to figure out how we're going to get people to change. And we've had a lot of changes in technology, you know, in real estate and, you know, specifically leasing. But I think in general, and the theme I've learned is the most important thing you can do is train. And within that training, you have to have an operational focus. I personally would never just allow a vendor's trainer to train anybody, because you've got to have people like me in the room, or like your IT professionals in the room, who know why we are doing something specifically to us and not just an industry, because it needs to be very specific. I found adoption, when people can feel like you had them in mind when you were, you know, looking at the software or thinking through something that's going to make their job easier, their life easier, when you're able to articulate that, adoption's a lot easier. And when you are in the room during that training and you're helping guide the questions that come back, you know, regarding why are we doing this, or will this replace this, you need to be able to be there to answer that. Now, I'm a little bit of a control freak, so that's why I tend to go to every single training. But we have a great, you know, we have JVG Smith University. We have fantastic trainers. We have a trainer who is operationally focused. She has that background, so we're able to talk through that. But I think adoption beyond to me, like the training is the most important part.
I'm going to go in front of that. I'm going to go, Stacia, that the sponsorship needs to be with the department that's actually going to be spearheading and using the solution. So when we did our deal flow, when we did our deal flow system, there was, first of all, the executives in the leasing process were involved with the vendor selection process. So it was really going to be their, we gave guidance and opinions, but it was going to be their call because they were the ones who were going to live in the system. The team had was heavy on representatives from each of the groups that were going to participate in the process. And I think with agile methodologies today, it has helped in that you don't go down in the basement anymore and build something based on some spec that someone wrote that they thought this is what they needed, that everyone is engaged throughout the whole process so that they're seeing pieces of functionality and testing them and part of it through the whole build and rollout process. And we actually had leasing be the trainers in the process. So it wasn't IT telling you how to use the system. We can tell you where to click, but you're the ones who are going to be living it and experiencing it. We don't always know why you click here. So having the business users involved motivates them. The other thing is knowing that, and this is kind of a lesson learned in any technology process, knowing that the first time you do this, it's not going to be exactly right. It's going to take some iterations and some refining, and sometimes it's a little more than refining. It's sort of do-overs to really get it to where you want it to be. But that's okay. It's a learning process. And as long as everyone stays engaged, they see that their feedback is continuously getting put back in the product, that we're making those modifications based on that. And it's really a partnership. You gain adoption. And the other thing that we've talked about is this enter it once, use it many, keeping them in that system, getting all the functionality they need within one system, whether it really lives in your, we do the same thing with our document management system. Nobody's in that. They're in our CRM system and they click on the button to see the lease. Or they're in our ERP system and they're clicking on the button to see the lease. They're not logging into a document. Getting them where they need to see it, entering the data once, using it everywhere else. So it's really focused and geared towards them. And again, improving it based on their feedback. And that's continuously.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we did the same thing at Urban Edge. And I'll tell you, one of the things that really made the platforms that are most successful are those that are promoted and sold by the business themselves.
And sometimes the business will shame other people within their organization or cross, hey, look what we got. And it almost becomes a
competition, right?
Uh-huh.
Yes.
I think this is such an important topic. We sort of obsess about user adoption. Actually, just recently wrote a blog piece, which is sort of 4 tips to prevent busted software implementations. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Helaine hit on 2 of the things that are incredibly important, in my opinion, just to frame them a little bit differently. I think the procurement process itself is a huge part in having a successful set of user adoptions, meaning that you pull users into the procurement process, and then you have an agile procurement process. And by an agile procurement process, one of the things that I think is overlooked is many of us look at the totality of a solution and get excited with the vision. And we're like, wow, this can do so much. The reality is, though, we're dealing with many sort of novel experiments where the probability of them going just as planned is pretty low, just to be honest. You're going to learn. And so if you can... And this is, I guess, a lesson learned for LeasePilot, because, you know, we, through many hard lessons, have, you know, realized that rather than promising the moon, we need to step back and break our solution into the most risky elements for users so that they can actually purchase those first, try them, eliminate that risk, and then have a modular way of growing with software over time to get more and more out of the software. The third thing, which I think is really missing in real estate organizations, just I don't see it, is a clear connection between whether it's OKRs or KPIs or whatever you call it, outcomes that individual users are held accountable for, and whatever software you're buying. So users are more willing to use software if they understand how it's going to help them achieve something they are held accountable for. And that's not in a negative way, it's in a positive way, like what's the value they create for their organization. In many instances, I see a lot of real estate companies that don't have clear KPIs for individual business units. And then there's no way to tie a piece of software and demonstrate, like, how does this actually help you achieve something that's really, really important for you and has been acknowledged by the company as something that we want to accomplish. Mm-hmm. I'll leave the fourth one for the article. You can read it.
And turnover. You have to watch turnover, because if you lose your sponsor or you lose, you know, key users and, you know, they're gone, you might, you know, you need to make sure that there's, like Stacia said, continuous training or some rollover planning as it relates to these applications as people leave. Mm-hmm. That's my experience.
All right. Well, I'm going to leave this to the last question, is your final thoughts. If you had to do it all over again, what would you do differently? Everything is perfect. We don't need to do it all over again.
I can say for myself, if I could do it over, I'd want to get to where we are now, where we design a product where we can make it as frictionless and painless and fast to start to use and experiment with before moving into a more complex setup. So it's providing customers easy, as close to out of the box solutions as possible that then invite them to do more configuration after they have like wins that they have adopted and advertised.
I think to Gabrielle's point, I think in the past we've bit off more than we can chew, and it just took longer. And I think today's world, fail fast, like pilot something, try it out, see if it works. If it does, keep building. If it doesn't, start over. So, mm-hmm. Being one in a safe environment that it's okay to fail, learn from it, and try something else. But two, to be able to be agile and do things like pilots or proof of concepts or prototypes. So mm-hmm. you can see what it's gonna look like and see how it's gonna work. And I think the generation of tools that we have that we talked about in the beginning, going full circle, they are configurable. They are more, users can make modifications to them. It doesn't require as much IT involvement. And I think that's important as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with Helene. I think that it's really important to know when something's not working and to be willing to make a change and to understand why it's not working. You know, is it the software? Is it the process? Is it the people? Where's the problem and how do we resolve it? I think that's something that I think we've gotten better at over time, and really not feeling like we're stuck and have to do things the same way all the time.
Mm-hmm. And I think just the last thing there on the process, you know, I think we've all kind of hit on this through the whole thing, is about our ERP, and our ERP was not meant, you know, it kind of cores the core of the business, but doesn't really go out very well to other outside groups or users. So the thing that I think is nice now that's different, you know, some are redefining that ERP structure where things are not like it was. I call it lazy ERP. They only take it so far, and then you got to figure out the rest. You got to figure out how your outside brokers are going to have access into your system, all that. You figure that out. And the newer ERPs now are redefining that that which are good, that allows you to be able to publish that information from the same system and not have to go out and buy a third party to do that with. So that's the thing I like seeing in the industry now. I'm seeing those innovations and changes to those platforms and to those ERPs that I think is going to make our business a lot better.
Great. Any other thoughts? Well, I'll share one of mine, which is not so much what I would do different, but what I would continue doing. And it's to put a vision board, include your business, and look at all these next gen platforms that are out there and see how it's going to play out within your organization so that everybody's on the same page as to what are the platforms that you're going to be implementing over the next 1, 2, 3 years, right? And make sure that your business is on board. So with that said, I think Nancy.
Yes, I'm back. That was great. Thank you, Cecilia. And thanks to all our panelists for participating. That was a great session, a little different format for us. And I think it worked really well. Thanks for sharing your insight, experience, and recommendation on the lease automation process. We truly believe it. Appreciate it. I'd like to, before we sign off, just take a moment to mention a few events we have coming up in the next week. First, tune in tomorrow for our weekly news show, RealCom Live. This week, we'll be exploring the intersection of building science and data science as we meet with the team responsible for the Fifth and Dinwiddie project, an example of attainable, sustainable, tech-enabled mixed-use development. And then next Thursday, we'll present part two of our in-building wireless series, The Role of CBRS in the Built Environment. You can register on our website or by using the link I've posted in the chat window on the right. That's it for today. Thanks again, panel, and thanks to the audience for joining us. Have a great week.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you. Thanks.